Hello, welcome to another sports journalism podcast as part of your BSc Sport Media course. This week we're looking at live blogging during matches, the live pages that you see on The Guardian or on the BBC. We're also going to look at how you can make your match report stand out from the crowd as well. We're going to be speaking to David Pritchard, who's one of the writers at BBC Sports Online. Dav started out, did a diploma in journalism at Cardiff University after getting a degree from the University of Leeds in English language and literature. He's worked for the Westgate Sports Agency, writing for all sorts of outlets for them, worked at Ladbrokes.com, the South Wales Evening Post newspaper, and then moved on to the BBC, where he's worked at Euro 2016, he's worked on the Ashes, he's worked on the Open Championship Golf, the Tour de France, Giro d'Italia, and a few Rugby World Cups as well. You've been working at BBC Sport for how long?
It's coming up to about 6.5 years now. Yeah, that's gone quickly, but yeah, a long time now.
Yeah, and the focus of the writing for the website, how much has that kind of changed in that time?
Yeah, quite a bit. So when I joined, I think the online department of BBC Sport Wales, you could say it was relatively passive compared to the other parts of the sport department, in the sense that there wasn't much in the way of original journalism from the people involved. So it was more a case of turning around interviews that the radio or TV guys would have gathered. So I started actually doing a bit more radio stuff, going out to games, interviewing people, doing the odd bit of updates, not unlike stuff that you would do. And then I started in newspapers. So I was quite keen to get back into the writing side of it. And then when I did that, we started getting online people to games a bit more, because I think your match reports and stuff like that really benefit if you're actually there. And from that, started to do predominantly online work, still keep my eye in with a bit of radio and TV work. But yeah, that's how I really got into it.
I remember sort of the kind of time that live pages really started to kick off. The Guardian did them really well, sort of around cricket, and I know Ben Durs and Tom Fordyce were kind of two of the big ones at BBC Sport. Did you kind of see that side of the business kicking off as much as it has?
Yeah, that's a really interesting part of it. Similarly, I got into those kind of live page coverages because of those people you mentioned. I remember wasting a lot of time in my sixth form common room following cricket matches rather than actually doing matches, thanks to Tom Fordyce and Ben Durs. And then when I started at the paper, at the Evening Post, online journalism for local papers was still kind of basic. We were only introducing live pages at that point. And then you get to the BBC and obviously things are a lot more sophisticated and the structure's in place. So when I moved to online, it was quite good timing because Swansea were in the Premier League by then. So the team in Salford, the kind of HQ of BBC Sport, they run a live page for every Premier League game individually. They do them for international rugby football matches. So in my line of work, because I'm doing all of those sports and a few others, it was quite nice that you could just throw yourself into that part of it. So say I'm at a game and my job is to write the match report, among other things, I'll still be contributing to the live page. So there'll be someone running it and there'll be my job to contribute maybe bits of colour that you couldn't get if you're covering it from the office, you know, atmosphere, what's happening on the touchline, little bits of analysis. And there are other days when I'll be running the live page myself. So could be at a Six Nations match, could be at a Wales football match. If someone else is writing the match report, you can really throw yourself then and run the page yourself. And it's quite fun because, as you've seen from those live pages, when you go back to BBC Sport pages about 15 years ago, the Guardian pages, you can have a bit more fun. Even the BBC can allow a little bit more editorial freedom, allows your personality to come through. And I think that's what the audience is going for, because quite a lot of the time, cricket's different. It's a way of actually following the game. You want to know what's happening. And that's still important with football and rugby and other sports. But I think also now you're finding people might be watching the game on TV, but kind of want to second screen experience. You might want to see what pundits are saying, what you're saying, what the, you know, what the contentious issues or the funny stuff going around is. So yeah, they're fun, and they're developing all the time. It's a massive part of the job now.
So in terms of the writing that you do for them, like you said, the humour side of it needs to be there. Because I remember, again, the early days of The Guardian, I think Josh Widdicombe used to write for them quite a bit on their live pages as well. So I think that there is a level of people expect it to be a little bit more than just what's happening. Does that make sense?
Definitely, yeah. Because if you go on a news live page from the BBC, you're expecting something quite serious, respectable, reliable. You're looking for facts, aren't you? When you go for a sport live page, you're kind of expecting something that's not going to take itself too seriously, because sport is seldom that serious, is it? So yeah, you're trying to create a tone where, yeah, it is, it's fun. You're allowing the writer's personality to come through a bit, and you're trying to create that atmosphere where it's the writer, but also quite a big kind of audience as well, which is quite good in terms of participation. You know, the cricket live feed is probably the ones that work best, because it's a long day. As much as I love Test cricket, and I love it, you can't talk about cricket for 8 hours in a day. you've got to have the odd divergence and rattle on about cakes or something like that, or, you know, funny pun 11s and things like that. And that's where the live feed really comes into its own, I think, that you can get involved now with social media, as well as in the early days where you'd email or text get your comments in. But yeah, I think tone, having a bit of fun is really important, because that's what people watch sport for, isn't it? For enjoyment.
So that combined with the other aspect of the writing that I wanted to talk to you about, which is sort of making match reports jump out of the computer, if you like, kind of be that slightly different from just being telling me who scored and how that happened. How much of a sort of cultural hinterland do you need as a journalist away from the sports stuff to be able to do that?
Yeah, cultural hinterland to me is really important. You know, when I have student journalists ask me, you know, how do you improve your writing, or how do you find your own writing voice? Obviously, writing is really important. Just write as much as you can, try all the different styles. But reading is really important, and reading non-sports stuff is vital, I think, just to give your language that kind of richness that you get from just exposing yourself to, whether it's literature, whether it's novels, poetry, magazine, journalism, whatever. You'll find your voice will kind of develop itself through that. So I was quite lucky in the way that I did English at uni. So I read quite widely then, and the journalism side of it was kind of the fun stuff that I did in my own time. So I was in the student newspaper office more than I was the library, and I was doing work experience placements. And you read a few kind of writing guides along the way. Orwell's 6 points are always worth remembering. You don't want to like dedicate yourself to them too slavishly, but there is one point that sticks out. Is like, you don't want to be writing something and reading it back and think, have I read this before? I mean, so I think trying to keep originality is important. You're not going to reinvent the wheel and write a Shakespearean sonnet every time you're writing a match report, but at the same time, you're quite wary that sport can be quite cliche heavy, and not just the obvious cliches that you think of when you think of sports journalism, but just certain phrases and words that you only read in sport journalism. So I don't think I've ever used the word aplomb in my career, because I've never heard of another walk of life where you use it. And I try not to use the phrase made no mistake, because if it's not in your everyday parlance, I just don't see why you would use it in sports journalism. And sometimes, obviously, there's great sports literature out there. There's so much great writing about sport, whether it's American, British, other countries, wherever you go. So much inspiration to take, but I do think it's important that you get out of that bubble as well, and I just realised that I've just whittled on about one small part of your question, the cultural hinterland. But I think that is really important. And then hopefully then taking you to the actual nub of the question and the match reports. If you've got that richness in your writing, you hope that reading your work becomes an enjoyable experience. So it's not just about saying what happened. It's how you say it. You know, from a fan's perspective, I remember I would go to watch a match, and on my way home, you'd pick up a paper when it was still the pink paper, or when I was a bit older, when you could actually read something on your phone. You want to relive the experience. So that's one part of it. You want to cater to those people who want to relive the match, you know. So a lot of, you know, one of the best parts of the job is covering Wales football or rugby. And it's interesting when you get a reader or a Twitter follower or one of your mates picking you up on something in the match report that they disagree with, or you say, oh, actually, I really enjoyed that. It was like reliving the game. That's one part of it. You are writing for people who haven't seen the match. Is you want to strike a balance between telling the story of the match for those who weren't there, interesting enough for people who were there to relive it and take something new out of it. And you're also trying to place it in a bit of context. So it's not just what happened, it's why it matters. So, for example, I don't know, I think back to Wales at the World Cup, the Rugby World Cup last year, the match against South Africa. So I did the semi-final. And you're aware that, although my working week is usually in Wales, that's the match report that the BBC Sport website is using for the world. So you could be a Japanese rugby fan, an American rugby fan. If you're looking for the BBC Sports match report of that game, you're going to come across that piece. So you're trying to make the piece universally accessible whilst trying to drill down and focus on the features that you think make it most pertinent. So, you know, Wales's pain at missing out on another final, but also mindful that it's South Africa reaching a final. So you don't want to be too parochial, you know. It was an interesting storyline about South Africa's kind of revival under Razzie Erasmus, that kind of thing. So you're trying to place it in context, explain what happened, but place it in a context that hopefully keeps it fresh and relevant for quite a broad audience once the game has been as well.
That all sounds doable, but within the time frame that you have to do that, how difficult? So what would it be? So say you're doing an evening Premier League match, from final whistle to when this needs to exist, what sort of time frame are we talking about?
For the Premier League match report, they would expect some version of the kind of top chunk, so maybe the top third of the piece, pretty near the final whistle. Maybe if there's been a late goal and caused you to rewrite, there's a bit of leeway. They'd probably give you a couple of minutes, but a better example, say it's kind of 2-0, say Liverpool are coasting at Cardiff last season, for example. You'd have had an idea before the match of the main kind of narrative, so prep is important for anything, you know. So you've got the stats at hand, you've got a main idea of the kind of the main narratives at hand, so Liverpool chasing first title in 30 years, Cardiff fighting relegation. You don't want to pre-write too much because you want to keep it fresh and based on what you've actually watched. But if they're coasting 2-0, you're probably writing the top 6 or 8 paragraphs and sending it over to the sub editor with about 5 minutes left so they can press publish. If it's a mad game and, you know, it's a 3-3 draw and there are 2 late goals and there's another late goal, it's 4-3. One of the most topsy-turvy matches I can remember was Cardiff Wolves a couple of years ago when they were both going for promotion and Cardiff missed 2 penalties in injury time. So you're like trying to rewrite all these different plot lines for it whilst trying to keep an eye on the action. In an example like that, sub-editor in the office might have one sentence ready to go for the final whistle just to buy you a bit of time, but they're still expecting that first chunk within a minute or two of the final whistle, and then they'll expect you to send the rest of it in chunks. The style for the BBC sport website for the big matches is what they call modular match reports. So you've got the top section, which tells the story of the match in the wider context and kind of sums up the main events. And then you've got the story of the match, but in kind of thematic chunks. So you might have, say, going back to that Wales South Africa match, you might have the top chunk, which tells you everything you need to know in terms of South Africa getting to the final, Wales missing out again. The next section might be about the pain of Wales missing out in conjunction with the story of the first half, and then the second, you might marry that your second half copy with a bit more on South Africa and how they've reinvented themselves of late. So that balance of telling the story of the match and trying to place it in that context, and you should have it all probably there on the site within about 10 minutes, I'd say. It can get intense.
Are there moments where it doesn't happen?
There are moments when you are really up against it and you've that adrenaline like coursing through your veins, and it's a bit, and you're in that awkward position where you're pressing send and picking up your laptop and rushing through the concourse to get to the press conference. Or there are other times when you just slam it shut, you've spent about half of it, and you have to get to a presser, which is a little further away, and then you're sending the rest of it from there. But touch wood, so far there haven't been any major disasters in terms of I've had anxiety dreams where there are you know, that's probably quite sad. I know everyone gets anxiety dreams of different things, like turning up to an exam that you haven't revised, but for me it's turning up to the World Cup final and inexplicably you look at your laptop after 85 minutes and you haven't written anything. That's the anxiety dream I've had a few times, but luckily so far that's not happened. I've had Wi-Fi issues which have magically resolved themselves with a minute to go, but no absolute disasters yet.
is it hard then to get those thought processes to the point where it is different in a short space of time? Because you could do the nuts and bolts of it in a short space of time, but being creative, like if I was writing something, I would need a bit of space and a bit of time to work on a couple of drafts of something and make it what I wanted it to be. Within a match environment, you don't have that luxury. Is that a difficult skill?
Yeah, and I love writing features. That's probably the part of the job, as well as going to matches, I enjoy the most, when you can, like you say, you know, craft it, take your time over it, redraft it, speak to lots of people, bring all the voices together. With a match report, it is hard to get all that across. And when you're honest with yourself, every match is not going to be this kind of grand multi-narrative occasion. Covering Wales at Euro 2016 against Belgium is obviously going to be richer in meaning than Cardiff against, I don't know, Reading in a midweek championship game with both clubs mid-table. When you're writing that, you know, it's a bit easier sometimes if it's a more straightforward game, and you know, then the sub-editors and the editors aren't looking for, as firstly, they're not looking for as much work to start with. You know, a championship match where there's not much writing on it might only be 300 or 400 words. A Euro 2016 quarterfinal with a lot writing on it is probably likely to be double that. So maybe you're looking at 700 or 800 words. So on that occasion, you'd be going into the game knowing that you'll be under the pump with deadlines. So you'd be, with your preparatory notes, you'd be looking to explore some of the ideas. So going into that Wales game, for example, you're thinking, if they win, this has to be their greatest moment in their history. So you're looking back on the other great moments in their history. You're not preparing lines as such, but you are thinking of the context. So you're not scrabbling and looking for records. You're not looking.
Yeah.
Because sometimes something will happen and you don't want to be scrabbling and looking at soccer base and you're trying to follow the game as well. So, you know, I think if you're speaking to commentators, it's all in the preparation for them. And they'll say, you know, like a stat is never wasted, even if you don't use it. And I think back to Wales Andorra, but in that respect, yeah. It was the first qualifier for Euro 2016 back in, I think it was September 2014. And Wales, were, you know, all the talk was about the golden generation, they're going to finally do it. But you still have to make sure, just in case all hell breaks loose and Andorra cause an upset, you want to be prepared. So I had all these stats about when Andorra had last scored. It was like they hadn't scored a competitive goal for something ridiculous, like a few years. Lo and behold, they were awarded a penalty after 5 minutes or something like that. So you have that to hand. Usually you don't use it, but on that occasion, you know, you want to use stats sparingly, especially in written pieces, I think. But on that occasion, the stat illustrates your point. How can Andorra be beating Wales when they haven't scored a competitive goal for this amount? Never won a European qualifier, that kind of stuff. So I think what I could have said in briefer terms was that, yeah, to get across those narratives and that context, a lot of it is in your preparation. But equally, kind of calling the game and its significance. So for the massive games, you want to have quite a big armory of preparatory notes and context behind you. For the less significant games, you've got to accept that it's not going to be your masterwork, but you get it done.
You say you don't kind of prepare lines. Have you ever kind of had, well, either for a live page or for a match report, have you ever had a thing that you definitely want to get in?
Yeah, it's funny because sometimes you will just have your notes and you'll end up kind of copy pasting something you've prepared, putting it into the piece and trying to adapt it. You don't want to become too wedded to a single point or sentence for fear of kind of upsetting the feel of the rest of the piece. So if you're too wedded to an idea, you might find that you're not calling the game honestly, and you so that there is stuff that you're prepared to get in with a live page. It's a funny one because you want to be sparky and kind of reacting off things that you see. But yeah, I'm trying to think if there would be something you'd prepare. Maybe a funny little stat or a quirky anecdote involving a player you might try and get in there. But on the whole, yeah, you try to keep it fresh, I'd say.
Is there an example of anything that you are particularly proud of from either a live page or from a match report that you've written, which would immediately jump into your head when you talk about those things? Is there anything that you've written that you think, yeah, that was when my brain was working at its best?
I think maybe because it's fresh in my mind, the Wales South Africa World Cup semi final match report, I was happy with. Obviously, the Welsh rugby fans among us, and I count myself as one, won't be happy with the game. But
I think that's an important distinction as well, is between your work and your pride in what you've done, and separating that from your emotions. Because, you know, everyone is, I don't know, an Arsenal, a Man United, a Liverpool, whatever you are, but in this job, you're going to have to report on them being bad or something brilliant that could have happened not happening. And separating out those two things in your head, I think that's really important.
Yeah, massively. And, you know, you'll know you've covered Wales's rugby and football teams with your country. Obviously, you are a fan. You want to see them succeed. Excuse me. But I think once you've been doing the job for a while, once you've been speaking to the people involved, you want to see them succeed. You want to see them succeed from a national pride point of view. But I think the longer you do the job, the easier you find it to detach yourself. And you're so wrapped up in your work and the adrenaline is pumping so much that it doesn't really occur to you. It's almost like during the Euros qualifying campaign, is that there's that kind of double excitement of you want to see Wales qualify for a major tournament and you also want to work on a major tournament. So you feel like you're going on the journey with them. So, you know, when Gareth Bale scores against Belgium, it's not only exciting because the crowd in Cardiff are going nuts and it's a great occasion. It's exciting for you as well because you feel like you're reporting on something historic at the time. So it's a kind of double buzz, even though you're detached from it professionally.